Like the conversations you hear on Basic Folk with your favorite roots artists? Then join Back Catalog Listening Party, a weekly podcast where you can dig deeper into their catalog. Top songwriters like Mary Gaucher, Chris Smither, Dar Williams, and Lizzie Ngo join host Mother Banjo and Anthony Earig to talk about their old albums with a live online audience. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and learn about attending live tapings at backcataloglisteningparty.com/join. Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Hello, how's it going? How are you doing? It's Cindy. I'm the host of this podcast. So happy that you decided to check out the show today. One of my favorite bands, Blind Pilot, is who we are talking to today. Israel Nebaker, frontman for Blind Pilot, is on the show. Before we get to that, let's talk about us, staying in touch. It's so hard to do, isn't it? Well, the easiest way to stay in touch with your friends here at Basic Folk is to sign up for our monthly newsletter, which you can do so at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com. Once a month email that keeps you updated on what's going on here on Basic Folk. You can also follow us on social media. We are at Basic Folk Pod on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We are also a listener-supported operation. You can make a financial contribution by going to the link in the show notes or basicfolk.com. You can throw us a couple bucks every month. You can make a one-time donation of $100. It all really is so helpful. And thank you so much if you are a contributor. All right, high five. Let's get to the show. The Oregon-bred indie folk band Blind Pilot goes on a deep spiritual journey on their new album In the Shadow of the Holy Mountain, produced by Josh Kaufman. The inspiration for frontman Israel Nebaker lay in his songwriting process. After struggling with writing for years, this is the first Blind Pilot album in 8 years, he set aside the songs he had been working on, which will be included in a new solo record in 2025, and he gave himself a blank slate and 1 month to write an album's worth of songs to present to the band. He demoed the songs and headed for a trip centered around spiritual growth in Norway. Searching for ancestral connections in the Sami culture and community, a semi-nomadic Scandinavian people in which he has roots, he participated in a Sami shamanic journey exploring indigenous spirituality. A Sami shaman took him on a drum journey, a ceremony, and invited him to listen for ancestors and listen for visions. He had a vision where his ancestors were beckoning him to a path that led straight to a mountain, which was clearly where his family legacy and origin lay. Back in the studio with the band, he re-listened to his songs and was confounded with the fact that the album was about his ancestors. The connection that the rest of the band felt in delivering the music is palpable. The special emotional dynamic that always exists on a Blind Pilot album is supercharged on the new record, In the Shadow of the Holy Mountain. We'll take a listen to a song from the new record. This is Jacaranda, and then we'll talk to Israel Nebaker of Blind Pilot on Basic Folk.
Left them on the stairs of gold. Matsumoto crossed the world. Heard it on the southern wind. Blew the seeds into his hands. Blooming with the color of a miracle. Meet me on the same park bench. When the trees hang their purple heads. I'll be playing the same song, the beat you were working on, singing don't be long, don't be long. I won't be long, I won't be long.
Israel, thank you for joining me on Basic Folk today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get everyone's name pronounced, the four core members of Blind Pilot. Let's see how I do, and then you can score me between 1 and 10.
This is a fun game. I like it. All right.
Okay, great. Israel Nebaker.
10.
Wow. Okay. Drummer and co-founder Ryan Dabrowski.
I give it a 7.5. Dabrowski.
Dabrowski. Okay.
Yeah.
I could feel it coming out wrong under pressure here. Okay. Multi-instrumentalist Katie Claiborne.
10.
This is the one.
This is the toughie. It's coming up.
Luke Yetsti.
Oh, that's like a 8.5. That's really...
What?
Yidsti.
Yidsti. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
You can tell Luke that I did better on his name than Ryan's name.
I will. I'll let him know.
Okay, great. The band is based in Oregon. Everyone, it seems like, is based in Astoria, Oregon.
Ryan is living in Tucson these years.
Okay. What the hell?
Yeah, well, he got married to a wonderful woman, and she is from Arizona. Okay. And she tried the Oregon thing. She couldn't hang with the gray weather, so.
Oh, I see. Okay. I just want to tell you before, I was wondering when to tell you this, before or after, and it seems as though I'm telling you before.
Okay.
I went through a very miserable 2017. It was like, the year ended up being amazing. Mm-hmm. But there was like a really bad time for me in 2017, and your band like single-handedly like carried me through the bad times.
Wow. I'm so sorry to hear that, and I'm glad that we were there with you.
I don't want to be weird about it, but
no,
your band basically like kept me like breathing in and out.
Mm.
Not to be dramatic.
No, I this is one of my favorite compliments to receive with music. It's one of my favorite compliments to give other musicians too. Because I don't think it is dramatic. I think art can be just as powerful as you're describing.
Mm.
It can be just as helpful as that.
I was looking for info on your growing up and couldn't find any. So I thought we'd start with square one. Like, where did you grow up? Where was music in your childhood? Who was playing music? What was everyone listening to? And where were you in the mix?
Where was I in the mix of music, or how do you mean?
In the mix of people that might have been listening to music, like what were you being drawn to?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I grew up on the Oregon coast in a small town of 1,000 people, 2,000 in the summer with the tourists. It was a beautiful spot.
What's the name of the town?
It's called Gearheart. And
Gearheart.
It's a beautiful place. Kind of funny, like all of the nicest homes in the town are just empty most of the year. The beaches are still my favorite places to go in that spot. I grew up in an artistic home, creative home, a passionate home, religious home. I grew up with Mormon and Jewish, and I grew up with my mom was a dancer, my dad was an artist, a painter. Music was always on. It was always like mostly sort of 60s folk revival and psychedelic rock. That was like the most prominent, and whatever was currently popular too, a little bit of that. Some classical music too. Nobody in my family really played music much. My dad was kind of learning the banjo my whole life growing up, but just had a couple songs that he'd go to, and he was always tinkering and fixing banjos. There's always like banjos hanging on the wall, but mostly just because he was working on them. But
that's very inspiring to me that he, for the most of your childhood, was learning banjo. Cause like,
yeah,
I'm trying to learn guitar, but I'm like, I'll do it like one chord at a time. Like I'll learn one chord a year.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as you're going to it, that's what it's about. I think it was definitely a household where music was appreciated in a passionate way. I really started playing music, or I caught the bug for making the sounds rather than just listening to them at my grandparents' house down in Covina, California. I'd go visit them in the summers, and my grandma played piano, and it was just my favorite game to learn a song, like a really simple song that she'd teach me. And the game was, she would show me a part until I got it down by heart, and then she showed me the next part, and I would just play that song over and over, what seemed like all day long. I was so obsessed with it, and then she would teach me the next song once I had that one down by heart. And I just loved the experience of hearing something in the air that originated within you. It's going through your fingers into the instrument, into the air, and then you're hearing it, and it's kind of a circle that's creating. I just love that feeling. So I was hooked. And I begged my parents for piano lessons for about 4 years until they caved in. And then I got really sick of piano lessons.
I want to hear more about, like, what kind of kid you were. Because, like, hearing you describe the way that you were drawn to the piano sound, like, makes it sound like you're a very thoughtful, precocious. Is that the correct word? But what kind of kid were you, Israel?
Yeah, people that knew me at that time, family friends and relatives, often I've heard people say, you were the shyest person I've ever met in my life. You know, I was just literally silent most of my childhood. Even my own family, like siblings and parents, were like, we really didn't know what was going on, like, to a level of, is he like completely cerebrally with us? It seems like he is, but it was a question. I had a pretty severe stutter for a few years. And I think that was part of, not speaking hardly ever. I think it's one of the reasons that I was drawn to music so much. It was a voice that I didn't have, in a way.
Do you remember the reason that, like, why wouldn't you speak?
I mean, it's a funny thing to try to remember, like, what you were like as a little kid, because it's just stories of memories that you've built upon. But I think it's accurate to say, I remember I had recurring nightmares in that time. They were always to do with language. It was always to do with my whole family was going to get eaten up by a monster, or everything was going to, you know, it was some horrible fate unless I could say something in the exact right way. And I knew there was a way to save everything by stringing together the right words with the right tone and saying it the right way. And I think that's the best clue for me, looking back, why I couldn't speak. It just felt like words were so powerful and they were so important, and I just wasn't ready to speak what was in me yet. I didn't have the tools.
Wow, so powerful. So your connection to nature is pretty clear. There is lots of your songs touch upon the outside world. You're a hiker, you're a camper. You said you feel the most at home, and you felt the most at home as a kid when you were in the forest. Where did your love for the outdoors come from, and who helped to cultivate that?
I think just by growing up in a town where there wasn't much going on. It was the greatest place to be if you loved being in nature. It was my favorite thing to do as a kid. Even as a little kid, I just had freedom to just wander down to the beach. It was right there, or wander into the woods and just kind of listen to everything. And I just by growing up in nature, it was just the best thing going on in my town. So, I think I also grew up with the example of my parents appreciating it. I mean, it's, you know, they both came from bigger cities and made the choice to live in that way. And I also saw my dad appreciating nature through his painting quite a bit.
Exploration was a big theme for the writing and recording process of the new record. So what has been your lifelong relationship with exploring? And then what was it like to experience this renewed sense of exploration with the album?
That's a good question. That's a big one. I think it makes me think of Ryan, my drummer. There was a feeling of kismet and excitement when we first met in college. And it was, all of our first musical experiences had that feeling of exploration. The first time we really played music a bunch together was busking on the street in Cornwall, England, kind of by necessity, kind of for fun. We were both in a study abroad program there.
So witchy.
Yeah.
In Cornwall.
In Cornwall, it is. Yeah. Oh, I love it there. I really love it. So you spent time there?
No, I have Cornwall envy. I went on a trip to England and I was trying to find like witchy places to go, and that kept coming up. And Tori Amos also lives in Cornwall.
Oh.
So there you go.
Yeah. She's the best kind of witchy, isn't she?
Did you see her when you were there?
No.
Yes.
But you know, we were in Newquay, which is
it's too bad.
Did you ever see that movie The Witches? The kids becoming mice, like turned into mice and stuff. So that hotel where most of the movie
Roald
is.
Dahl.
Yeah. So that hotel where it was filmed was right there in the small town where we were. So it did feel kind of witchy. But yeah, and then our first tour as Blind Pilot was just, it was just going to be a fun summer adventure. It wasn't meant to be a permanent band project. It was just going to be for the summer, and we called it Blind Pilot. And you know, I recorded a little demo for us to bring with us, but it was a way to travel by bicycle down the West Coast, and we just literally didn't have enough money to fund it without bringing our instruments and playing along the way. So it seemed like this double win of being on the adventure of traveling and bringing something that we had made back home and seeing if we can connect with strangers in strange places too, not typical venues and not typical towns that get musicians stopping through. I've seen that spirit that started with the two of us continue through the band. It is like a feeling of exploration. It's ebbed and flowed too. As we have found success, there's been a need to become more professional, which can get in the way of that feeling of exploration. But since last summer, bringing this new album to the band, that has been there bigger than it has been since the beginning. It's been really wonderful. Like even in the studio, there was this huge feeling of exploration and covering new territory and the excitement of that.
That's so cool. Also, now I can't stop thinking about Blind Pilot covering Tori Amos songs.
Oh, yeah.
To take it back to Tori Amos, which is where we always end up.
I think that's a great idea.
A little silent all these years.
I could hear it.
Okay. I heard you talking with Chris Pandolfi on his podcast Inside the Musician's Brain.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about your relationship to your songs, and you seem to be someone who has like a very close and, from like what I can tell, kind of like an unusual relationship to your songs. Like you're really trying to give the songs what they want, and especially on this new album, trying to just channel them instead of control them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm getting that accurate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or not. But can you talk about how you treat your songs, and do you think it's an unusual way to think about them? And like, when did you start viewing songs like this?
Right off the bat, I remember the first time I wrote a song, it wasn't on purpose. I was learning guitar, I was learning basic chord structures, and just learning what chords fit together. And I was also writing angsty teenage poetry. And I was just, I'll never forget this moment.
For sure.
I just was like, had my little sketch pad there, and I had my guitar in my hands, and literally without thinking about it, I just started putting melody and words over the chords. And it was this strange state of not really conscious. I literally just kind of woke up with a few verses and a chorus, and asked myself, did I just write a song? Is that what I did? And as my like consciousness returned, it was this feeling of, am I allowed to do that? I don't know. What do you have to do to be a songwriter? And it really felt like a gift in two ways. One, just that a song came through, and it felt like, I don't know where that came from. It just wanted to exist. But it also was a gift as a template for me. And I always think back to that first experience, because that to me was the most pure way of a song coming through. Was just, there was no intention of outcome. There was no like, oh, this will really hit on a stage, or I could hear radio DJs wanting to play this or something like that. It was just no mind, no nothing getting in the way. It was just purely present with the song, and that's hard to do every time, but that's always my intention.
Also had a really good article in Atwood Magazine about the new record. And so you recently told Atwood Magazine, when you started Blind Pilot, I didn't want to be anybody's boss. I didn't want to be a leader. I just wanted to be. I wanted to have community in music. So previously, where had you experienced musical community? Like, what was it like, and what elements of those communities did you want to bring into Blind Pilot?
I had been in, like, you know, other bands before Blind Pilot. There was my high school band, and that brought me into community in a way that I hadn't been. Like I said, I was just such a quiet kid. I really just could not talk to people. But through that band, I got to be at parties, to be at things where I could be a part of it and had something to bring. And I was in a couple of bands in college, and it was always the same thing. It was always like, I loved the community aspect. I loved the intimacy with friends of entering a musical space, which is so much more intimate than any other typical social activity. I loved the connection of that, but I really could not stand the ego that always got in the way of it, and it always landed on me because I was the songwriter and the singer. And even in bands that I didn't even really organize those bands, I was asked into them, but I ended up getting resented each time. And I by the time we started Blind Pilot, I said, okay, I want to do this differently. So I just when Blind Pilot first started in Portland after that first bike tour, and we decided to record an album and play some shows around Portland, it was like 14 people in the band. And the concept was, this is community. Whoever can make it to the practice, come. Whoever can make it to the show, come. We'll find a spot. We'll find something for you to do. If whoever wants to sing, sing. There wasn't a plan really, other than these are the songs and everybody's invited into them. That was the intention, and I think it was a beautiful intention, but it came with its challenges once we found success and it became more defined what the band was and what we were doing and why people resonated with it. Then there was expectation, and I had to figure out how to become a band leader and how to deal with the inherent human nature outcome of a band of the leaders being resented. And that wasn't fun for me. Mm. It was really hard. I had to learn and grow there.
Yuck.
it's pretty universal. I've never met a band where that didn't exist. So, yeah.
Right. Drama, gossip.
Yeah.
Heartbreak.
Yeah.
Murder.
luckily not yet for us. That's
knock on wood. Okay, I wanted to talk about Ryan a little bit.
Sure.
Blind Pilot's co-founder and drummer Ryan Dabrowski.
Good job. 10 out of 10.
Dabrowski.
Yeah.
Dabrowski. Yeah. You met at the University of Oregon. Dabrowski.
Uh-huh.
You met at the University of Oregon when you were 19 and decided to form a duo version of the band, I think around 2005. So Ryan is a visual artist. He's created the vast majority of visual artwork for Blind Pilot. How has having that kind of creativity in the band impacted your sound over the course of the band's existence? And how do you think, like, his visual art is impacted by his rhythm and vice versa?
That's a good question. I art is so cool because it's almost too good of a vessel sometimes of expression and communication. Even if you try to emulate someone else, it ends up being you. It feels like you. And what I feel in Ryan's drumming is the same thing I feel in his paintings. It's him. There's a sweetness, a simplicity, a goodness, a drive, an energy that is just so comforting and inviting. And I think that we're a really good duo musically because I have a tendency to bring things into more thoughtful and even darker exploration in musically and content. And he has a tendency to bring us toward the immediacy of connection, what will be attractive to people and immediately connect. And together we have found a pretty good line that we walk together with that. There's also a cool aspect that happens when, you know, he's created almost all of the artwork for the band, for the albums and for the merch and for just any image that we're using. And I love how, the images that you present to be associated with the music seem to color the tone of the music and seem to instruct people how to listen, what to listen for in the music when they hear it. And I think he's done a really good job of
That's cool.
Of that. Yeah.
Love that. All right, Israel, let's talk about the bike tours.
Sure.
I just have an in general question about the bike tours. So here are the facts I have. In 2008, Blind Pilot took a bike tour. You rode from Vancouver to San Francisco. The first of the two tours was supposed to run all the way down to the Mexican border, but the trip was cut short because your bikes were stolen. You got your bike back. Sadly, Ryan did not. Here's the question about the bike tours.
Okay.
How did doing a bike tour as your first major tour kind of set the scene for what your touring band and vibe on the road would be?
The biggest thing it did with our intention as a band was, like you said, it was a feeling of exploration. It was a feeling of, this is not defined what we're doing. We don't know what we're doing, but do you want to come and be a part of it? we were both in the Portland music scene, and which was very, at that time, very like almost kind of isolated. It was a real, like, it was starting to be kind of this ironic hipster cool kid club, and there were wonderful bands coming out of there at the time, but we decided how great would it be to just get out of that scene and go play places where people are not expecting a band like us and music that we're playing. And I took it as a really cool challenge of, instead of writing songs with the intention to share at clubs in Portland, where I knew the tone of the scene, it was the intention of, okay, we're going to be in like a rural little town on the coast of Southern Oregon, where it's mostly conservative and it's very different from Portland. And they're mostly listening to other kind of music. They're not listening to indie folk. How could I write a song that would also connect to them? Something that feels genuine and authentic to me, but could also connect to them. So it set this tone for the band of, we're not trying to succeed within an established definition. We're trying for something that is more essential about community, about adventure, about creating a path, and we don't know where it's going.
Okay, here's just a bunch of background information, no questions. I just want to get this in.
Yeah.
Just for historical context. So there have been a lot of iterations of the band. You said that there was once a 14-piece Blind Pilot, and now it seems like there's four members that we announced at the beginning of the episode and two auxiliary members. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Can you name the two auxiliary members?
Yeah, David Jorgensen and Ian Christ. And Ian is unfortunately not playing with us anymore, but Dave is on some tours.
Okay, cool. One thing that I love about Blind Pilot are the emotional dynamics of the band. Like, it's always been there, and it really started kicking in with your 2011 record, We Are the Tide, and continued on, and then like Lions in 2016, and it's on the new record too. And I feel like the dynamics in the band are channeling this like intense, beautiful, spiritual plane. Like, and you, I never see them, like, they always come out of nowhere, you know, and I'm always like blown away and knocked over, basically. What can you say about those dynamics and those emotions that I'm talking about? Like, when did you feel them coming into the consciousness of the band? And then, second part of this question, what do they do for you?
I hear, I don't want to just take credit for that aspect of the music, but I'm gonna. It's how I feel as a person. It's how I feel as a person. It's my intention with how I want to connect to people in this life, in this world, is I'm always looking for the uncomfortably earnest and the touching on spiritual, but not religious, but what binds us together as humans, as living creatures on this planet. It's like I'm kind of known for being a horrible person to talk to at a fun party, because I will be uncomfortably earnest and try to take you into a deeper conversation. What I see, how that relates to my band, is that something I resented for some years was like, no one in my band has ever asked me what a song is about. No one has ever said, I really like those lyrics. What are you talking about there? Or okay, like, as we're figuring out the arrangement for this, what is this song about? What does it mean to you? It's never been a conversation that's been brought up. But looking back on it now, I realized that that was a wonderful thing. It was really lucky, because what they were doing instead was just being intuitive, just listening to the energy and not asking that question of needing to know what it's about, and just stepping into the emotion of it. And sometimes I'll you know, gently steer it, be like, well, I like this. This is a really cool vibe that's happening, but the emotional tone is different from this. But it's rarely, it's a rare occurrence that I need to do that. They always just get it. They hear the song, and I'm very lucky to be playing with musicians that understand the emotional tone and can step into it and not try to show off over the top, but just try to integrate and be part of it.
Wow. This is so cool. Okay. Housekeeping question, administrative question. It has been 8 years since the last Blind Pilot album, and you said the songs were not coming. You were trying therapy books, books on writer's block, writing trips. I love a trip. Yeah. But it wasn't working. So the part that I'm like kind of confused on, from those songs that you'd been working on for the past like 5 years, did those become the solo record that has yet to be released?
Yes. Yeah, it was quite a second half of 2023. I recorded a solo album with Josh Kaufman in New York in July. I came back and wrote the Blind Pilot album in about a month here in Astoria.
Okay.
Then I went on a trip to Norway to be part of a documentary, retracing my ancestral roots. Then I came back and we went into the studio and recorded the Blind Pilot album. And it's kind of a jumble. It was a big half a year of just creating two albums and writing one of them. It was a lot at once.
I mean, it sounds like not that much. I'm just kidding. That sounds like a heck of a lot of projects going on at once. But just to clarify, the solo records, I think it's coming out next year.
Yeah.
Is what I saw.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Looking forward to it. Because I was like,
thanks.
What the fuck? Israel released a solo record and
right.
me, the right. number one fan, doesn't know about it? That was my visceral reaction.
Well, I appreciate
so
that.
So thank
yeah.
God.
It's coming.
All right. So this record, In the Shadow of the Holy Mountain, we're going to dig into mm-hmm. it. Produced by our mutual buddy, Josh Kaufman,
yeah.
Who I just talked to Amy Helm
for
cool. the pod, and she produced with Josh Kaufman this round too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that yeah. guy. Okay, fourth full
Me
length.
Too.
So you got your songs for your solo record, then you start from square one with a new Blind Pilot album. You gave yourself a month to write and then present the songs to the band. Was that after the ancestral trip to Norway?
I wrote the songs. I sent them in demo form to the band. I went on the ancestral trip to Norway. I came back. We practiced the songs. Then we took them on a supercharged. We went on a very short tour to lead into the studio and then recorded them.
Okay. I feel like this question is not valid based on the new information I've received. I'm so sorry.
It's probably not at all your fault. The chronologically, there's some things that don't make sense, and it is hard. It was hard to write about. It was hard to. It was hard for the writer to convey in the bio because I don't know if this is.
I need a flow chart.
Yeah. Exactly. And the flowchart would be circular. It would be kind of strange because I feel like this album is very much influenced by the trip that I took to Norway. And I knew that it was coming, but I feel like that trip and those experiences, I hear them in the meaning of the songs. But I wrote the songs like 2 months prior. So it kind of doesn't make sense chronologically. To me, I hold it like, yeah, that was just this snapshot of a summer. But yeah.
Shadow of the Holy Mountain, the album title, was inspired by this incredible trip that you took to Norway to reconnect with the ancestral line that was severed when my great-grandmother immigrated to the U.S. You have roots in the Sami community, which is a semi-nomadic indigenous people in Scandinavia. And it seems like you got to interact with members of this community. What was it like to be in that land and connect with the people there?
The simplest way I could put it is that it felt like a returning to a feeling that I've always known, that I've always been seeking. It felt like the more I learned, the closer I came to the music, to the important connections I made there. It was like I was receiving answers to questions I've been holding since I was a kid. Questions about humans and our connection to nature itself. Questions that are spiritual, like what our role is here in this life, what it means to be in community, what it means to be connected to family. And even kind of where do songs come from? Where does music come from? There were some deep questions that the closer I got on that trip, to learning from really important people, I just was in this presence of my great grandmother, my grandmother, my father. I felt them all there with me, stronger and stronger. And I also felt in the presence of the answers I've been seeking most of my life.
So I do this sometimes when I go on a trip. I'm like, how can I live here?
Yeah.
Did that happen to you?
It did, very much so. I was in a town called Gatugeno. It's like the last place where Sami is still the main language spoken. And they have a university there and they have a language program. And I was invited to come do a 6-month course and learn Sami, which would be such a beautiful experience. I know I'm still trying to figure out how I can do that and still do music and not take a giant break again. Now seems to be the time to be playing shows again and putting new music out in the world again, but I want to do that.
Okay. I see like 2026.
Yeah.
Is the year for that.
I think you're right. Yeah.
All right. I want this for you.
Thank you.
You were taken on a drum journey by a Sami shaman. On this journey, this ceremony, you were invited to listen for ancestors, to listen for visions. And you had a vision where your ancestors were like beckoning you to a path that led straight to the mountain. And this sounds like a huge moment for you.
Yeah.
You said, I knew right then that the mountain represented the origins of all of us. So that's where the title of the album, In the Shadow of the Holy Mountain. So what does the mountain, this is such a simple question after that setup, but what does the mountain mean to you?
It was a simple but beautiful vision. My ancestors were saying, this is good that you're here and you've traveled here and you've come here. It's good that you're seeking connection up your line of ancestors. It's good that you're seeking connection to us, but come further. Come back further. There's more to this intention than you understand. And they were showing me that the intention of seeking that connection to each of our family stories, each of our ancestors, that intention extends all the way back. And as I went on the drum journey further up that line, the line became a path, and that path led to a mountain. And I knew that the mountain represented the origin of my line, the very first origin, but it also was the origin of all of us. And And I understood that intention, that feeling that draws us to want to connect to family and our ancestors is the same intention that connects us all together.
And when you say all of us, do you mean like all of humanity?
Yeah.
Sweet. Let's go.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Something that was messing you up back when you were having a hard time channeling songs and writing songs, something that was messing you up was a fear of expectations of who you were supposed to be as a songwriter and a band leader. And the way that you approached writing the record in a month allowed you to like let go of expectations and seemingly quiet the inner critic. That process and act of letting go has brought you back to a playfulness and brought playfulness back into the band again. And I feel like you are a very serious person. Like, I might be wrong, but like, you're not the class clown. Like, you're not the goofball. You're not like pranking fellow class. Like, you're not putting a whoopee cushion under somebody's chair.
Sure.
Is that true? And if so, can you talk about how important playfulness is in your life and how it felt when it came back into the band?
That's great. People that are closest to me know that I have I have a good sense of humor. I'm a pretty funny person, but it's always held back and reserved. I'm always the person. I've never been the class clown. I've always been the one waiting and listening and waiting to be called on, waiting to be asked what I think. So I'm not usually asserting any kind of humor or playfulness. I'm just waiting to feel the energy of a group before I step in. Which is why I love being in a band with my friends, because some of them are that way. And we have really different personalities and we kind of carry each other in that way. I think the playfulness, I think humans just are playful. Like this life is playful. It's so funny. The nature of it, when there's an openness to appreciate it, and that it's this openness that has come back to my band with this album, and with these songs. It's been beautiful. It's been so much mutual appreciation, so much encouragement between each other. It's been a new direction, not caring so much about success or professionalism, but just caring about the humanity of each of us and who we are together.
How many whoopee cushions are involved now?
If you ride with us on in the van between shows, there's a lot of things like that. Yeah, there's a lot of whoopee cushions. Maybe not literally, okay. But yeah.
Free merch idea. Blind Pilot whoopee cushions. Can Vista Print do that?
Right.
Great.
And what would be the image you put on it?
Well, that would be up to Ryan.
Yeah, I think
he would know. So Ryan would know how to fuse. He would fuse the humor of the whoopee cushion with the spiritual, emotional dynamics of Blind Pilot and create the perfect image.
Yeah, I think right? Ryan would want. Yeah, I think you're totally right, and I think, knowing him and his sense of humor, I think he would just put like a really nice portrait of me on the whoopee cushion. I think that would be the thing.
I love that. Okay. While you were writing these songs, you didn't fully understand them. And listening back now, you see the album being about ancestral lines and connections, and you're reflecting on the gifts that have been passed down and connections that still exist. So, like, thinking about that, that's not something that we hear about often. Like, normally it's like generational trauma, like what my ancestors have done to me that I still carry now in my body that's bad. But how is it to be able to reflect on, like, generational gifts or generational joy, and how is it to feel and hear that spirit of your ancestors in your band?
Oh, no, there's definitely a lot of ancestral wounds and trauma that I hear in the stories that made their way into this album. But it's not in a way of resentment. It's in a way of connection to my ancestors and them showing up, helping me to work through these things, helping me because it's important for our whole family. I see it in my own story, in my life. There's a lot that I didn't mean to put in there that is very much about my own trauma back to childhood. And I see how that relates to general themes of my parents and my grandparents and their parents. So I was unaware of this, that I was putting this into the songs, or that the songs coming through carried this, until literally after touring on them, after showing them to the band, after recording them, after mixing, after mastering, it was in the final listen back that it hit me, the messages and how personal they were.
Mm. Cool. That's for the high rolling, the high, no, I was just going to make a joke about how those track by track notes are for the high donor Patreon subscribers only. $10,000 a month and you get.
There you go. There you go. That sounds good.
Track by track. Sounds...
No, yeah. No, I've
so
always...
many ideas for you, Israel.
I love it. Yeah, you're full of great ideas.
So what advice would you give to someone who wants to do what you did to explore their ancestral lines? Like anything that people should prepare for, watch out for?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm qualified to give advice. I know that for me, it was a deeply personal journey and experience that is ongoing. It was a first for me to connect to ancestors as strongly and deeply as I have in the last year and a half. And for me, it started with this intention of the documentary. It also started with a need to get unstuck in my life and to overcome some wounds I've been carrying most of my life. And it also started with just doing a wild thing of sitting and listening and creating a space of asking for connection to my ancestors. And I had never just done that with such intention before. I had felt connection from them in moments and glimpses, but I had never done that. And that became a pretty powerful thing. It all lined up though, timing wise, like these three things, this trip, and this need to put out new music again, and also feeling this supreme and divine connection to my family like I hadn't before.
So cool. So beautiful. Before we let you go, do you want to answer some silly questions for the lightning round?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Israel Nebeker, who is your favorite powerhouse vocalist?
I'm going to be bad at this lightning round if the questions are like this. There's so many vocalists I love so much.
First one you think of.
Let's see.
It could be Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, no, Tom York.
Oh, all right. That's a really good one. Okay, this one is easier. Monster trucks or Matchbox cars?
Matchbox cars, for sure. Yeah.
That's a duh. That's a no duh. Okay. What is your favorite flower?
Parrot tulip.
Cute. Would you rather bike to Mexico or walk the Appalachian Trail?
Bike to Mexico.
You got to do it.
Yeah.
You got to do it. 2025. That's the year. Mm. Two more. What is your favorite mountain?
That's a good one. Saddle Mountain.
Nice. Okay, this is the last one. Israel, what color is your soul?
Matter root red.
Ooh, nice. Okay, this was awesome. We have finished the interview. Ah, thank
Wonderful.
God you released another record.
Thank you.
Holy shit.
Thank you.
I love your band.
Thanks so much.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by CJ Nungesser. Alex Stanton composes our music. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there, wherever you get podcasts. You can search for us on the SiriusXM app under Basic Folk. Check us out on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. Or you can go to our website, basicfolk.com. Or did I also say wherever you get podcasts? Anyways, we are out there. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Maybe your friend that's like especially extra and nervous and needs to relax. I think Blind Pilot is the band that does it for me. I put them on and I feel like, whew, all of my cells stop shaking. It's wonderful. So send it to your extra and nervous and eccentric friend. They'll really appreciate it. And I appreciate you, my friend, for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.